Hey everybody, Jason Burmis here, and I've been trying to get this one together for a while, but it's been kind of tough because our guest today, Tony Gosling, has been trying to get home so readily. We actually had him while he was not over in the UK, right? That's where you're back home?
I was in New Zealand, in Rotorua, when we last spoke, Jason. Really, when this whole concept of the lockdown was just being announced. So, and it took place, I think it was like 3 days after we spoke or something, the major lockdown in New Zealand and in the UK. So, yes, a lot of water's been under the bridge since then. A lot can happen in just a few weeks. And we're now at the supposed end of that lockdown, as we were told at the time. Only thing is, it isn't the end, is it?
No, sure isn't. And I remember we were talking about this. And luckily for me, I mean, at least the way I'm feeling about it, is the militarization has not been as bad. They didn't cordon off New York City. However, just about everything else I talked about being, you know, no matter what you thought about the virus then or even think about it now, the response was going to be worse than the virus itself. And that's not to take away from the validity of it. But with all of the Orwellian measures that different parts of the world have already established will have to be done or taken place for the normal to get back together is frightening indeed.
Well, it is an incredible thing. I don't think it would be possible to predict the extent to which virtually the whole world's taken this whole idea of having a lockdown on. I mean, obviously, this virus is something much more serious than just your average flu. And not actually probably much more serious than a very bad flu. I mean, we have in the UK two winters ago, we had 50,000 extra deaths from flu. And we're not even approaching that at the moment with this COVID-19. Mm-hmm. This is also remembering that, you know, this is something which is included on death certificates along with all sorts of other things. So really the figures we're getting for deaths, the media generally, it started off by saying these people were dying of COVID-19. Now they've slowly moved towards saying, oh, they're dying with COVID-19, which is obviously something very different, you know, with these underlying health issues. Another thing, Jason, I find fascinating is the way we're being told, hang on, you know, you've got to choose between herd immunity or the lockdown. No, you don't have to choose between the two. You can do both at the same time, as the Swedes have done. And as other nations have done, which is basically find your most vulnerable citizens to this nasty virus, which looks increasingly like a man-made virus. And you can find those people and just, you know, basically make sure that they are isolated in some way. And it doesn't have to be so strict as they can't come out of their homes. And you can let the people who are very, very unlikely to get even particularly sick with the disease or particularly die with it, and let them catch it and get the herd immunity. So that's effectively, it seems to me, the most sensible, sane policy. But it seems we're being given this alternative of either black or white. So it's either mega lockdown or else, hey, it's every man for themselves and you're putting everyone at risk and you're going to be killing people by even speaking to them. You know, this kind of attitude is really, this is the Orwellian side of it, I find, is that we're not allowed to have, you know, anything but this black and white thinking. It's extremely frightening to see so much of the mass media going along with this, a little bit of kicking back against it, but not much.
No, not much at all. And one of the things is right now, so Cuomo announced some of the antibody tests, right, that they've done. So now they've done these random tests on 18 and older, and they're saying there are, they found 13.5% of the population, I think, in the city that have the antibodies for it, have recovered. Most of those people didn't even know they had it, et cetera. It was a random testing because, again, they were testing for people that were completely asymptomatic. When you look at the number one comorbidity, especially in New York, and New York City is the densest, and I understand why people are skeptical because the vast majority of the people that are dying in this country are in a small place in one state, and it's mine. You know, I mean, New York City. When they tested Boston, right, and Boston, another one of these cities that has breakouts because it's there, when they tested 397 just random homeless people, because they wanted to see, you know, whether or not the homeless were contracting this, 146 came up positive, 36%. Guess what, Tony? not one of them showed any symptoms whatsoever. They were all completely asymptomatic. Now, this says something to me about the virus. Number one, it does seem to go after people that have immune problems. When you look at the homeless population, you know, they're living on the streets. They're, you know, getting by just enough in most cases. They're not obese. They don't have diabetes. They don't have these things that this seems to attach to and especially go after. And the other thing is, most of the homeless population, although they may be older, they're not elderly. They're not in a home between 70 and 85. And those are the vast majority of deaths. So, number one, I think there are a lot of carriers for this that have gotten over it. I don't necessarily think they put out a 0.5% mortality rate today in New York as a hypothesis. Let's say it's just 0.1, just like the regular flu, but it's five times as contagious. That's the problem. And they're all are these asymptomatic carriers, as we're seeing. I mean, when not one person out of almost 400 homeless people are showing any symptoms and more than a third are popping for it, you have to question what's really going on.
Right, yeah, and you'd say this whole idea of the cure is far worse than the disease is definitely now prevalent. What with the destruction of the economy, it's becoming, isn't it? I think a bit like a religion, and maybe this is the religion of Bill Gates or something. But you know, if you do not believe that this is the best way forward, then you are some sort of antisocial person that just wants people to die. You know, so it's a religious aspect of this. Whole idea of the vaccine, we must wait for the wonderful vaccine. The only thing is, when this vaccine comes along, we know that this, well, at least we're told that this virus, this COVID-19, can be, you can be reinfected with it. Mm-hmm. So why is anyone even thinking about waiting for a vaccine? Because even if you get your vaccine, you're going to get reinfected. That is to say, if the vaccine actually doesn't kill you, or doesn't infect you badly, as I mean, this is the incredible thing about Gates and his vaccine programs, is that so many people have got the diseases that these Gates vaccines in the past have been trying to protect them against. So there is obviously, and one other thing is, just before I went out to New Zealand, we did a program, a couple of programs here in Bristol on FM, where we took some clips from a documentary which was made by the Swedish broadcasters about the death of the UN Secretary General Dag Hammarskjöld in 1961. He died in a plane crash. And the Swedes, this documentary team, took 8 years with a Danish investigative journalist. And the documentary won the best documentary at Sundance Film Festival. 2-hour-long documentary shown on the BBC late at night in November and disappeared off the iPlayer very quickly. But it's a terrific film. And they go into, as they're investigating the death of Hammarskjöld, their own guy. I mean, actually, it's a beautiful film. If you can get a chance to see it, it's not easy to see. It's not easy to get a copy. But what they do is the guy who fronts it is a Danish investigative journalist. And he starts off by saying, well, actually, Dag Hammarskjöld was a really boring guy. You know, he was a real bureaucrat. But he was actually the UN Secretary General. He was from Sweden. Let's go and have a look at what really happened to him. And what they've uncovered in that documentary is incredible. It's basically a far-right, racist, white supremacist private army called SIMAR in South Africa, which was being used for all sorts of black operations, dirty operations, mostly funded by the big mining corporations in Africa, and they shot down Dag Hammarskjöld's plane. So this was the world's number one public servant, UN Secretary General, 1961, when the UN was actually doing stuff, you know, so they would try and intervene and stop wars in different parts of the world. The idea was to decapitate the UN Secretary General and actually try and decapitate the organization, take away any of its real ability to sort out some of these big global problems and take on the sorts of things that Kissinger and his friends were then kicking off, things like the Indonesian coup, Cyprus, invasion of Cyprus by Turkey. All these were the sorts of things that he was doing. But the rub of this documentary was unbelievable, because this SIMAR organization, they managed to find some people from there who were out in Madagascar. Was it Madagascar? Shit. No. Anyway, out in Mozambique, that's it. Out in Mozambique, and they were injecting black people with AIDS, saying that it was the virus, a vaccine, and actually injecting them with the AIDS virus. It's basically a Mengele Nazi-style experiment on black people. And this was absolutely evidenced by people who were involved. In fact, even one of the biologists who was involved in that program was executed in the street. And there was her brother was on the documentary talking about it all. So this is the kind of thing that's been going on behind the scenes. The idea that a vaccine program can be actually used to kill people by injecting them with something which may not kill them straight away, but it will kill them after a long time. And the documentary is called Cold Case Hammarskjöld. And it's a devastating film, which everyone should be able to watch. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be very easy to see. But so you see what I'm saying is that these vaccine programs have been used effectively by the far right, by white supremacists, by people like Anglo-American Mining Corporation, just to simply take over countries and kill people and kill black people particularly. So anyway, I mean, this is why I think maybe one of the reasons why this is happening now is that this stuff is starting to come to light. The programs, the whole idea of the vaccine programs in many of these countries being shown up to be actually some sort of dirty trick to just kill people with a virus, and it's a confidence trick, effectively.
Well, I'll say this: let's pedal back just a little bit to injecting people with AIDS or HIV virus. A lot of people are like, Tony, that is crazy. That is crazy talk. Well, I'm going to show some people something that's going to be a little crazier than even that. During the HIV/AIDS hysteria, hemophiliacs were taking an injectable drug called what? Factor VIII. Turns out it had live HIV virus. That's why these hemophiliacs, they weren't getting tattered blood. They were getting tattered Bayer or Bayer medication. This is actually published by the National Health Institute, the NCBI. You can go check this out yourself. But anybody that types, we'll do it live here for anybody that doubts me. Bayer HIV Factor VIII. And after they got caught in the United States, you can see blood money, contaminated hemophilia out of blood products. Bayer admits it paid millions to HIV infection cases. When they got caught in the United States, did they get rid of their batch? Nope. They sold it in Europe, and they sold it in Japan as well. They helped spread the virus, and a lot of people don't understand that. And that happened in the 80s, guys. That happened in the 80s. And it didn't matter what the color was, because there's plenty of talk we could talk about with eugenics and Bill Gates and India actually kicking out their program, the Bill and Melinda Gates vaccine program, under suspicions of, malice. And basically, again, that keyword, eugenics. Eugenics. And I got to ask you, now that these email passwords and usernames have been hacked, 25,000 of them, they were released to the public. I would assume anybody who was releasing them to the public already scraped the data. What do you expect to come out of the WHO, the Bill and Melinda Gates, the CDC they hacked? What do you think's coming?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is one of the major sponsors of some of the Guardian articles to do with vaccine programs around the world. Almost any Guardian article that you find has got the little logo on the side of it, financed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So this is the poor old Guardian, the once proud newspaper, basically ceding their coverage of vaccines to them. Quite the extent to which, how far this goes, I think it was put very well by, I think, is it Robert Kennedy, really looking deeply into just how sordid these vaccine programs were. But I think we have to sort of look at the mentality. And this is why I think people find it very difficult to say, well, you know, nobody I know would behave like that. Well, that's because we're dealing with a power elite, basically a cult, that see power as their only aim. And, you know, connected with things like the Skull and Bones Club. And obviously there are Gates families in the Skull and Bones. I was chatting to Chris Mulligan the other day, the author of the Fleshing Out Skull and Bones, about this. They're definitely in there. And they see themselves, basically, they see us as we see animals. I think that's the way to put it. They just see us like, you know, some kind of bit of fun, games to have with people like us. And they see us as stupid. They see us as inferior. And that's why they don't like any kind of criticism, because they've got this kind of aloof, elitist and completely separate ivory tower mentality. And the reason I say that is, you know, I've met some of these people at these Bilderberg conferences. When you meet them face to face, you can see quite a lot about their psyche and their soul. And they do not see themselves as in any way really connected with the rest of us. I must admit, when I met David Rockefeller years ago, he came across as actually a reasonably nice, you know, quite nice, affable chap. But you could see he didn't feel like he had to answer any question that I put to him. He was, you know, he just wanted to kind of change the subject and talk about nice food restaurants and things like that. Very erudite, very good at PR, really, with journalists. But they definitely see themselves as superior. We know quite a lot now about the whole sort of transhumanist agenda, which is part of their mentality, which is actually something which is, I would suggest, is the kind of modern fascism, really. We're talking about the idea that they can give their own children the ability to live forever. This idea of, you know, sort of by human genetic modification, that their kids will live forever. You know, sort of linking up with computers, the idea of the singularity, AI kind of taking over from human beings and helping them to sort of game the world and win over the world. But I think these people are actually have a fairly low level of mentality. They've got a massive amount of ego, a massive amount of wealth, but not a lot more than that. The other thing we're seeing with this whole corona thing is the black market's flourishing, isn't it? This is organized crime's field day. They love it. All this stuff that people can't normally get, they can easily get through black markets. They can get it through someone who's a contact of a drug dealer or whatever. And I think we have to start really talking in terms of this not just being a kind of new world operation, new world order operation. It's starting to get into the terms of evil. You know, we're dealing with evil here, I think. And, you know, you look at the amount of people who have died of this thing. I don't know what you think. It'd be interesting to know, Jason, but it looks to me as if we've got three main suspects as the labs that created this virus, assuming it is man-made, and it certainly looks from the evidence from the virology department at New Delhi University and others.
Hey, we'll stop right there. Stop. I want you to stop. Yeah? Because that's so important. I'm so glad you talked about the New Delhi, because a lot of people are talking about the Lancet study, and then they're also talking about, as I've been, of the Nobel Prize winner from 2008, I forget what his name is, but coming out and saying this looks like a biologically engineered virus, right? The Delhi study has been pretty much suppressed throughout the world because of the huge counter-arguments that it's making to the establishment that it's natural. Can you just go into that a second before you go off?
Well, yeah, I mean, what the New Delhi study, so this is a bunch of Indian virologists, as literally the day that the Chinese released the genome of this virus, that they absolutely brainstormed a session and over the next couple of days, and they published this report on what their assessment of the virus. I think it was 3 days after the release of the genome. And they're saying, look, there's these insertions into the virus which are look to us like the SARS protein and the AIDS protein or whatever they're called. I don't know if they are RNA or something. I'm not sure the technical terminology. They most certainly are. And they're saying effectively that what it looks like is that somebody somewhere has taken an extremely contagious common cold virus of some kind and inserted these extra little proteins in to make it particularly nasty. Now, I mean, that I've no idea whether that's true or not, but it's certainly a credible paper. And they put that thing out saying, we're not going to peer review this because there's not time. It's very urgent that people have a look at this and see it and make assessments for themselves. You know, we can't afford to wait weeks or months for this to be properly peer reviewed. But here, just have a look at it. Now, I've no idea. I'm not a virologist myself, but what we should be hearing is some sort of assessment as to this, not the just burying it and ignoring it. The same goes for this Russian GRU colonel who's come out and said, well, actually, this virus is definitely man-made and it's part of the ongoing war on China. He's also saying that it's an economic weapon as well. You know, this sort of thing should be reported by the press, even if they're going to report it critically, Jason, but they just don't. They ignore it and they bury it. And that's what makes me so suspicious.
Well, let's talk about that, because even with that hack, it was a hack that happened 1 a.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. I had no idea, because it had been scrubbed from Twitter. It had been scrubbed from all major social media, any of the passwords. Then, actually, one of my contacts in the film industry was DMing me, asking me if I knew about these Gates and WHO documents. And I was like, I thought he was talking about Event 201 and the videos and, you know, the PDFs they put out. And he goes, no, man, it looks like they hacked all these emails and passwords. So then I found a Reddit post from about 12 hours earlier, you know, at that 1 a.m. marker, where they were sharing that. And I was like, oh, my goodness, what is this? Someone from Reddit, because I've done an AMA over there, they contact me. They give me screenshots of the actual URLs, show me how Twitter's suppressing it. And the media didn't report on it till yesterday morning, Eastern time. So the media blacked it out for a good 24 to 36 hours before even letting people know that this was out in the digital ether. Then, because the only thing that was actually carrying the pastebin links were the Chans, they said it was white supremacists, Tony, that were trying to hack the the innocent WHO and the CDC and Bill Gates because of conspiracy theories. Just like they try to frame, you know, what happened in 2016 with WikiLeaks and those documents as Russian interference. They're always trying to frame a false narrative and take people away from the actual information that's about to be presented and shield that predator class at the same time.
Well, look, I mean, one of those passwords, I believe, was Lucifer, wasn't it?
Yep.
I mean, you know, this is, maybe they're just taking the mickey when they're doing this sort of thing. It's difficult to, you know, you can't really make any real conclusions. Personally, I don't think, you know, hacking of passwords and sharing of them is particularly helpful, apart from when little bits of evidence like that comes out. But, I mean, the real problem with the Gates Foundation is that they are completely tax-free, funded by all the massive monopolistic profits of an extremely greedy man. I think it was David Livingston, the author of Transhumanism, The History of a Dangerous Idea. He put a Facebook post up saying, Bill Gates is the new David Rockefeller, which I think is quite an apposite, really. What he's doing there is he's saying, as regards monopolists, Gates is number one now. Back in the early part of the 1900s, the Rockefeller family were the biggest monopolists on the planet by monopolizing Standard Oil, the oil companies, and also using all sorts of dirty tricks in order to do that. That's exactly what Bill Gates did in the world of IT, isn't it? But, you know, talking about this evil stuff, right, is that I must mention this Out of Shadows documentary, which came out, I think it was beginning of last week, which I think is a really good, brave attempt to look at some of the evil going down in Hollywood. Really important to see that the people who are running things there these days have an agenda. And that's why, I mean, I don't really hardly ever go and watch feature films nowadays. It's because they're basically pushing, you know, actually quite nasty stuff, particularly to kids, to kind of normalize, evil in a way. Is that what seems to be what they're doing? And there's no kind of, almost no heroes in these films. They're mostly anti-heroes, and it's interesting to see behind the scenes Mike Smith, I think the guy is, the stuntman behind it, has exposed, along with a really good, I thought one of the best summaries of the whole Pizzagate thing I've ever seen, which really explains why it was so important at the time of the last presidential election.
Yeah, I checked it out. I actually did a review on it. I gave it a 7 to 10 because I think the production value is incredible. I think the stuntman and his partner in Hollywood, their thing is incredible. Even the Pizzagate information that they put forward is very solid. Unfortunately, you know, with some of the people that they use as presenters, and people have attacked me for even saying this, you know, they've themselves promoted ideas like JFK Jr. is alive. Yeah, exactly. And that's the problem, Tony. See, I know that you're saying that, and you know, I don't want to say her name, but there are other things she's pushed that are just imagination land. Now, I think they did a pretty good job to stick into the facts. I probably, before putting in the symbolism, etc., and even mentioning Aliphantus, and don't get me wrong, I think they did a very good job in that. I would have said, listen, let's look at this one email, and they did look at it, of the pool party. Is there anybody out there that's a parent, that has a brother, a sister, etc., that's taking care of a child, that would think it would be normal that children would be Ubered to a farm as entertainment in a heated pool for anybody, especially John Podesta and whoever else was CC'd on that email? And, you know, and then also point out, you know, again, just to get it out of the way, that he also references Dennis Hassert as Denny and how it's time to get away to a private island because a judge later labeled him a serial pedophile. And this is a man that made it all the way to the Speaker of the House. I think the presentation is great. I think it has a great flow. I think the information is really good. I just think that, again, some of the people they used in the interview is going to bite them in the ass later on.
Well, because, okay, that's quite feasible. But the thing is, Mike has given it a go. You know, he's not a filmmaker himself. He was involved in films on, you know, in front of the camera. But he said, well, hang on a minute. I'm just going to get this out because I'm not having any more of this. He obviously feels like, as a stuntman, he was used in this industry, that when he was involved in it, you know, it was all exciting and everything. But he, when he got his injury, started to realize there's a bit more to this. And fair play to him for taking the time and effort to put it all together and make a film for us all about it. But look, I mean, this whole business of why is all this stuff happening in the US? Why Hollywood, you know? I think you've got to look at the end of the Second World War. You've got to look, and he did, didn't he? He went in a little bit into Mockingbird.
Exactly.
Paperclip.
The CIA MK Ultra stuff was stellar. I mean, go watch my review on it, but the CIA MK Ultra Disney connection is so important because he also talked about how Disney basically owns Fox. They own the Marvel movies. One of the things he actually left out is they also own the UFC. You know, and you look at the McGregor and how there's so much evidence that he's a serial violent rapist. Let me say that again, a serial violent rapist. And Disney promotes him. Okay, that's Disney now. So just the idea that, you know, the CIA not only bought up that land, but even pre-CIA, what did you have? You had Donald Duck banging around, Hitler brings the world, New Order, total propaganda against Hitler and the Japanese, etc. I mean, Disney's been in bed with the military-industrial complex and intelligence since its inception. So, listen, again, I think they did a killer job on the movie. I recommend it to everybody. My only criticism, again, is later on, the media is going to have an easy time discrediting it because they'll be like, featured presenter, person who, you know, JFK Jr. That's the only issue because I think everything else is great. Great production value, great story, great information. I think it's a good starter piece for people.
But for loads and loads of journalists that I know, they couldn't go there with a lot of the places where that documentary goes, and they would really feel that maybe their editor would tell them, but they would feel they had to give it quite a negative review, saying, well, this is just over the top, you know, Hollywood isn't this bad, blah, blah, blah. But of course it is, you know, and it's not just Hollywood. The CIA being, and I thought he was really good, but I think it was his name, Kevin something, who was the CIA guy on there. Really good, really on point. And to the point, pointing out some of the most important programs the CIA has been involved in media manipulation over the years. But why is the CIA like this? What's going on? I look at the end of the Second World War, the deal's done. The most important deal done, I think, was with Hitler's private secretary, who had access to around about $1 billion in 1945. That was a lot of money of loot from Nazi Germany. And the Brits got him out. I'm absolutely convinced of that. In 1945, they brought him out in canoes, commandos, and this is all in the book Op JB, who I've met the wife of the guy that wrote that. He was a commando. He was working with Ian Fleming, the Bond author, and they got Bormann out to Britain. And then basically, with Donovan and Winston Churchill, split the Nazi money up and did deals. I mean, this was one of the reasons that it's pretty obvious. On I think it was the 12th of May 1945, there was a submarine heading across the Atlantic, the North Atlantic, slowly chugging supposedly off to Japan with a whole load of enriched uranium from the Nazi atom bomb program, plus the fuses which were needed to ignite a plutonium bomb. And the same day that Bormann arrived in London, or in the UK, at least, you know, if we look at the day after the OpJB author and Fleming said, delivered it to Desmond Morton, who was Winston Churchill's private secretary over in the British zone in occupied Europe, so in Germany. So the day after is when that submarine changed course. It wasn't going to Japan anymore. It started heading to the US, and it surrendered to the USS Sutton, which then brought that for the Manhattan Project, all that stuff. The two Japanese officers on board, no one's really sure whether they either took suicide pills or were shot by the German commander of the submarine. But anyway, this stuff all ties up. You know, there was a very, very definite deal done with Churchill, with Donovan, at the end of the Second World War, to make sure that as many top SS people as possible had safe haven, new identities, etc. And they were particularly brought into the US, some to Britain, but mostly to the US, in order to get ready to fight the Cold War. They wanted a whole army of fascists that really hated communism to make sure that the US could win the Cold War. And that's really good that they brought Paperclip into that, I thought, because that often gets kind of sidelined, forgotten about. But that's what we're dealing with today, Jason, I think, is a financial empire based on that money that was looted from Europe during World War II. And our leaders, you know, supposed war heroes, Winston Churchill, people like this, were implicitly involved in making sure that organized crime got a massive boost out of World War II, rather than the good people, you know, that had lost their lives for fighting fascism.
Well, again, I think Annie Jacobson has done some great work on not only Paperclip, but then really after Paperclip into the CIA with Area 51. There are two books out there you got to see. She's done a great thing on DARPA. And really, DARPA is the evolution of those kind of groups you're talking about. It's the birth of that military-industrial complex that Eisenhower was warning us about. You know, somebody who was in World War II saw the intelligence apparatus growing, saw the privatized Lockheed Martins and Raytheons coming up, and saw this thing developing. And when you get into the Central Intelligence Agency and them using not actual Nazis, Nazi philosophies, you know, part of MK Ultra was that they opened their own brothels. And you're damn straight they used underage prostitutes. Don't think any different. You know, that's been washed over as well. So the history is there for those that want to look at it. And I think Out of Shadows is a really good tool to wake somebody up to be like, really, Disney, CIA? Oh, my goodness. Absolutely, 100%. I just know how the media is going to smear it. But they smear everything, I guess, right,
they
Tony?
Smear the truth wherever you find it. They will do their best to smear it. But look, the other thing is about the timing of this whole virus business, right? Why now? Okay, so we know that Gates had his ID 2020 he wanted to roll out. But, you know, I look also at this as a reaction to Brexit. You know, you look at what this has done, the whole idea of basically torpedoing the United States of Europe project, is what it's done to the Bilderbergers and the other elites that are relying on basically turning Europe into a corporate controlled, which it actually is. The EU is a corporate, there's no real democracy involved. And it was coming together, they were all starting to do their thing. And all of a sudden, Brexit comes along. And I think they absolutely hated the idea that their project was going to come to an end. Remember, this is like generations and generations of super wealthy, powerful people, egotistical people who have created this thing. And it was, yeah, I mean, it was the US of A. It was fair. There was a fair amount of democracy involved in that. The United States of Europe was not going to be a democratic entity. And Brexit has torpedoed the whole thing. So this to me is, you know, is a kind of way of saying, in fact, we've seen here in the UK, oh, apparently Angela Merkel and Deutsche Bank and people like this are saying, oh, well, you can't have Brexit now. We need to fight the virus together. And if we don't, everyone's going to die. So this is another excuse that is being used, I think, to, you know, turn this into a hysteric pandemic rather than, you know, something where we've got a sensible medical solution and basically doctors deciding what happens. This is the whole thing about the World Health Organization is it's run by a crooked Ethiopian politician. The guy's not even medically qualified. So how on earth you can do something like put him in charge of the World Health Organization really is beyond me. It's created this apocalyptic atmosphere, hasn't it? I often hear people talking about this as, is this the end of the world? In fact, the Daily Express ran a whole article, in fact, maybe several other newspapers have, about what does the Bible say about COVID-19, you know?
Oh, boy. You know what? I'm going to roll it back just a second. I'm trying to think what you were saying, because I think it was an important point during this whole thing. You know, you talk about the EU and Brexit. What is your take on Boris Johnson and his bout with COVID-19? Do you think it was real? Do you think it was staged? I mean, I saw that rollout where he looked terrible if it was him, and the nurses clapping for him. You know, that was on the mainstream media. We don't see that a lot here, but I watch, you know, I got BBC on outside on the other, on the television. You know, I watch over the pond news. What is your take? Do you think that was an attempt to get him out of there? Tell me what you think.
Well, I mean, it was a very, very good way of getting him out of the way for some of the crucial decisions, wasn't it? I mean, basically, who was running the country during that time? It was the civil servants and the cabinet office. And I'm not saying that Boris is some sort of super wonder guy. Of course not. But he's not around during some of the big decisions which are being made about, you know, where the testing's going to take place, how long the lockdown's going to run. He wasn't at Prime Minister's Questions this week, so apparently he's still a bit ill. I mean, I don't think it was staged. I think he was genuinely sick. You know, he certainly didn't look very good. But the main thing is to get him out of the way during a crucial time, you know, to make sure that the civil servants can just run the country all on their own. You know, that the other thing about all of this, which I find really, really important and appalling, is the way, I don't know what the situation is in the States, Jason, but we've been told here that you can't go and visit dying relatives.
No, now, you can't. Well, here's the deal.
What the hell is that about?
Before on, that, and this is what I was warning people about. This is when I was in D.C. at the end of February, and I could see that this was actually coming when I saw the panic buying in D.C. I was like, all right, this is actually going to come. And this is when I was first saying to people, I was saying, listen, have at least 2 to 3 weeks of food. That was my initial thing, 2 to 3 weeks of food, you know. But I said, look, there's a good chance they're talking about breakouts in old folks' homes. And now is the time, if you have a father, a grandfather, an uncle, an aunt, somebody who's there who you can take care of, and you're maybe afraid of losing. And I go, maybe not even to this virus, maybe to time, because it could be locked down for a certain amount of time. And a lot of people didn't listen. And that was the first thing they did in New York, and then the next day nationally, is they've essentially locked down all nursing homes. You have to be, you know, you have to work there. You know, they deliver pizzas there. My good friend who I go see, I just did a broadcast from his pizza shop the other morning. He has to talk to his mother through the window. You know, she's not doing the best, you know, because she wasn't doing the best to be there in the first place. You know, she doesn't understand what's going on. It's a really sad scene. And then after the fact, if they die from COVID, no, they're not allowed. And the other thing is, if they don't die from COVID, you know, they're allowed to have a service with their family, maybe 4 or 5 people, but there's no gatherings of over 10. So they're not allowed to have a real funeral here in the United States. Like I said, there's a lot of psychological impacts. There's a lot of economic impacts. This is a global transformative event. That's why I'm calling it COVID-1984.
Let's just compare. If you have a bit of a problem with your internet here, you can call an internet person to come and fix it, and they can come into your house and they can fix your computer with no mask or anything on, but you can't go and see your dying mother in a bedside. What kind of person makes decisions like this? Again, I would use the word evil. This is not human, the response to this. It's not, you know, nobody with any kind of heart can make a decision like that, particularly if you're prepared to go and risk potentially getting this thing yourself. Maybe you can wear a mask or something, but there's something actually really evil about what's going on, and the decisions that are being made by bureaucrats, computers, but they're not being made by human beings.
You want to see something crazy, Tony?
Go on.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about, there are those that don't believe this is going on. I know the Javits Center has been undermanned, but they absolutely have had beds there. And this person, I he's not a friend of mine. I don't know who he is, but he obviously has a public account, right? He was challenging somebody on my thing that somebody said it was a hoax. And he's like, dude, I almost died from this. And so did my mother. And we were at the Javits Center. Now, this is a picture his mother took at the Javits Center. Notice what they're using as beds. They're using the bottom reverse of FEMA coffins. So those are the FEMA coffins that we saw 10 years ago stacked up. So basically, they have a dual purpose. They throw a mattress over them. And then if it gets bad enough and they have to put bodies in them instead of the pine boxes, they're prepared to do that. You know, that's a real thing. You know, luckily, I mean, the numbers have been bad in New York City, believe it. But people are recovering, too. You know what I mean? They're using the ventilators less in New York City. They realize that's a death sentence. It hasn't spread that much out of the city areas. You know, that's why you're seeing the breakouts in Chicago, in Boston again. Because they're very dense areas. You know, anybody that would make you sleep on your potential coffin, you know, that's pretty hardcore, man.
So where is this, if it is a man-made virus, where does it come from?
That's a great question.
My best guess is either of three places. One is this Wuhan virology lab. That's probably, for me, the least likely, but it's certainly possible. The other one is Fort Detrick, which was shut down last year because apparently deadly viruses were being thrown away in the trash and there was no proper safety procedures there. Stuff was disappearing, so they closed it down in Maryland. But the other one is Porton Down. That's here in Wiltshire in the UK, and that's just outside the city of Salisbury where that whole incident happened with the Skripal, supposedly a Novichok, basically spraying around stuff, nerve agents, and some Russians coming over to try and kill people, which I don't believe, by the way, at all. I think there was a cult that these guys came over, but the whole story was pretty much confected. The idea that you can just kind of recover, as Skripal and his daughter did, from a nerve agent attack is just laughable, really. And even the doctor in Salisbury General Hospital said that there was no one who was actually treated for nerve agent. But anyway, that is where Porton Down was. And I can tell you, Jason, back in 93, I was working for the BBC as a reporter in Salisbury. And I did a piece one afternoon. It took probably about 2 hours recording of something called the Common Cold Research Centre, which was on the site of what had been called the Harvard Hospital during the war. And that was an American Army hospital just on the outskirts of Salisbury, where they spent the 1950s and 60s and early 70s then testing the common cold on loads and loads of poor. In fact, it was exactly like we've got now. So if you go now and you get a delivery of food, what people will do is they will leave it outside your door and then you will go and pick it. That's exactly what was going on in the Common Cold Research Center. But the thing is, we were told, as a journalist, I was told that this was part of the government Department for Health program and the National Health Service. Whereas, actually, I can distinctly remember the guy that was taking me around on the day was saying, well, actually, this is really a military program. So they were researching these coronaviruses and which ones were the most contagious back at the military in Britain, in Porton Down, back in the 1960s, 70s and early. I think actually it finished around the end of the 1970s. But that kind of research was what was being done. Now, there's no reason why that shouldn't have been carrying on, because at Porton Down, we know that is still active even today, even though these biological weapons places are supposed to be all closed down. Porton Down in Wiltshire is still going. So it's quite possible that it's come from there. I think most other major nations have closed down any kind of research like this. But this might be one of their little products, I think, possibly, if it's not come from Fort Detrick. Those are the most likely, and the least likely of the probable possible places is the one in Wuhan.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because the way I'm looking at it is this. They're already talking, they talked about those two main strains, now they're talking about a third identified, right? I think it is plausible and probable that this is not a nation state operation and obviously not a leak. Anybody who thinks that this is a leak from a lab, I think is probably on the wrong path. Now, it's being used to prop up this new cold, maybe even hot war between the United States and China, right? China and Iran saying bioweapon from the U.S. The narrative's a little different now in the United States, where you're allowed to say not a bioweapon, but you're allowed to say a bioagent from the Wuhan lab that was being used for an HIV vaccine that then escaped into the animal, got to the pangolin, and then was released into the market. So you still have to take steps, but it's still a biological agent from a lab. Now, remember, Uri Geller is actually the first person to put it out there that this, he had inside information that it was a bioweapon that was being transitioned from China to Iran, and it escaped and it hit human transmission. But not to worry, Israel's going to have a vaccine. So in my eyes, and Israel, even they've had to lock down. You know, I know the powers that be are using this for a benefit, but in essence, they've all taken these steps, and there are certainly people that are pushing back and don't love what's going on. You know, their interests, their pockets are getting hit. You know, not everybody in the Predator class or their minions is happy about this, but the Predator class overall, oh, baby, are you kidding me? They're scooping up. Walmart's at a number one. Johnson & Johnson's going to have the vaccine. Everybody's bowing down to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. All these people who were sitting at that table at Event 201 seem to be benefactors. But they're middlemen, right? So let's look at it, man. We know the United States, we know Israel, we know South America, Russia, China, all have bioweapons programs. They have for decades. We've had it for the better part of 50, 60, 70 years talking about biowarfare, and coronavirus has been around forever. Who's to say one of these oligarchs or, you know, I mean, hey, eventually, David Rockefeller, one of those eugenicists you referenced, right? Rockefeller Foundation, you name it. He died. He didn't make it. Kissinger may still be around. He might not be able to pull those strings, but Prince Philip might be able to, you know? A guy like Ted Turner, any of these rogue,
To me, Kissinger is definitely a suspect here. Look, he's one of those people who's got his tentacles right in to Beijing as deep as into Washington.
Well, he could definitely be part of the cabal. I'm just saying at the end of the day, one of these guys at the top could finally say, you know what, it's my last legs. Let's pull the trigger, Henry. Let's do it. And I'm not accusing anybody. I'm serious. You know, and you do it this way. You got to remember, before they were investigating that Harvard scientist, right, that apparently had two Chinese students that were working for him. He gets arrested in February. He was connected to China and their virology department. He was even connected to nanobots and nanotechnology, right? Even before that, they were investigating Harvard and Yale along with China and Saudi Arabia in another bioweapons program. So Saudi Arabia is another nation. I'm just saying this. To access the actual bioweapon would not be the biggest problem, and with our alphabet agencies like the CIA, the FBI, let's say the Mossad, let's say MI5, MI6, using things like Black Cube, Booz Allen, Hamilton, Stratfor, the Kissinger Institute, etc., to do most of their dirty work, the plausible deniability is going to be there in spades outside of a nation state. That's how I'm looking at it.
Could quite easily be. But look, Kissinger said, didn't he, in his article, he said either the world is going to have to come together to sort this problem out, or this virus could set the world on fire. Now, I mean, he's basically, is this a warning or is it a threat? You know, this is the way Kissinger, you always have to think this with him. You know, he's saying, well, this is really a difficult problem. Everyone's going to have to come together in a kind of new world order in order to sort this out. And if you don't, then it's going to go bang. Yeah, so that's attitude,
I
think.
Tony, they're rolling out all the favorites, right? They're rolling out Tony Blair, one world government. That's the solution. They're rolling out Gordon, new world order, Brown. I mean, they're literally digging deep. I'm waiting for Cameron to come back out and be like, let's do it, world government, we're gonna fix COVID-19. Come on, we're all gonna get matching tattoos, me, Gordon, and Tony. We're the three friggin' globalists, and we're doing it.
Well, that's right. And look, I mean, because these lockdowns are being extended and extended, I mean, the goalposts are shifting. You know, OK, we're going to do this for 3 weeks. We're going to do it for 4 weeks. Ah, hang on a minute. No, it's going to carry on and on and on, folks. This, of course, is a perfect cover to get a war going during that period. Suddenly, you've got your local population on lockdown, no protests in the streets, no one is even allowed to meet more than two people together in the same place unless they're being listened to by GCHQ and the NSA. I mean, my conclusion has been pretty much, while I was out in New Zealand, really, that the whole thing is a come on. I mean, you know, this is the idea, is to just use this as an excuse to, and this is what Gates has been planning, I think, for years, if not decades, in order to lock down the population so that you can provide yourself with an opportunity to have a war with very little proper democracy and your entire population paralyzed, effectively, if they wanted to do it, anything about it or stop it. So we're in actually a pretty dangerous situation if we don't force our governments to at least allow the 95% of people, maybe 90% of people who are very unlikely to suffer badly with this virus to break their own lockdowns. And that's why I think it's quite important to see these protests around the world in Russia, in Berlin, I was seeing the other day, some in the United States, in various countries, doing a deliberate, breaking these social distancing guidelines. Because a lot of young people are thinking, well, you know, I don't mind, I'll catch this. And in fact, you might even have catch coronavirus parties just to really stick two fingers up at this whole idea that for young people who are fit and healthy with a decent immune system, that this is going to kill them, because the chances are it's not. And a lot of youngsters value their freedom. They don't want to be stuck indoors all day. And some of them are climbing the walls. So we shall see. Some of this is bound to happen, where people are starting to think, well, actually, rather than suffer a house arrest indefinitely, I'm up for catching this thing.
I don't know if I'm up for catching it, seeing if you get a bad round of it. It looks like it can do cystic fibrosis damage, and they're saying it could be in your testicles. I mean, who knows? Again, you could be asymptomatic. All I know is I think that solutions are wrong. The lockdowns are wrong. I'm liking that people are pushing back on the idea of Bill Gates. I'm liking the hacking. I'm liking the fact that people saying we don't want a vaccine. Even Cuomo and some of the East Coast governors are now changing their verbiage just in the last 2 days. A treatment or a vaccine. Treatment we can talk about, okay? Because I'm not getting jabbed so I can go to my next MMA event that was canceled the day of. I was supposed to go to it, Tony. My God. My God. Tony Gosling, you can find him at Tony Gosling on Twitter. Tony, what do you want to leave us with? What do you think we missed here?
I think I always try and look at the context of these things, because that's the one thing you never get anymore. I mean, back when when I was working at the BBC back in the early 90s, late 80s, you still used to get old timers as journalists who would give you the context of what's going on. We're getting absolutely none of that now. And I think the real context of this is this whole plan through the last 150 or so years to create the state of Israel, to create the tension in the Middle East, the Crusader outpost, where we can have a religious war between Judaism, supposed Judaism, a kind of hijacked version, and Islam, and really kick off a third world war. That's, to me, is what this is, one of those things which is pushing that whole agenda. We're really talking about all this stuff to do with Albert Pike, Scottish Rite Freemasonry, and his letter to Mazzini in Italy, where he's basically laid this plan out. He's saying, well, look, this is what we're going to do. World War One, we'll destroy the Ottoman Empire. We'll make sure that the British occupy Palestine. And then World War Two, we'll create this Israeli Crusader state. World War III, we'll have a massive religious war. Everyone will then hate all the religions. I mean, anyone can read this letter, even though a lot of people dispute it. A lot of very intelligent people dispute it. You just have to look at it to see, well, this is what's going on.
Tony Gosling, we got to do it again soon. And hopefully, I know it's tough because we are so far apart. And I'm on Skype one time, he's on Skype another, but we will do it again. Thank you so much, brother, for coming.
Cheers, Mason.
You got it. Follow him at Tony Gosling over on Twitter, folks. And remember, I am completely 100% demonetized on this channel. $5, $10, $15, it means the world to me. I did end up purchasing the original Bohemian Grove Annal. That'll actually be my seventh. I've only got six over there. One of them was looking like a double. I also have this little gem right here. We're talking about the occult angles. This is actually a 1974 piece where it looks at a lot of the geopolitics. You know, Wall Street and Shangri-La is one of the chapters here. The bomb. It talks about what was really going on. Okay, what was really going on at these places. And yes, that is Pan. I did a earlier video today where you can check out exclusive Bohemian Grove stuff that's never been shown. You can also go follow me on Twitter, right? And I've got some new exclusive stuff in my Twitter feed from the Bohemian Grove. Loose Change, Final Cut, Fabled Enemies, Invisible Empire, A New World Order Defined, and Shade the Motion Picture are my documentary films. You can check them out free in the documentaries playlist. But we talked about another documentary here, and MK Ultra in particular. It uses some really good footage out of Shadows from this old special, when journalism was journalism, on MK Ultra. And I have a series on that and other aspects of MK Ultra that's also in a playlist. I encourage you to go check that out. We're going to do an AMA today because we have hit over 50,000 subscribers, 50,000 plus on the Burmese Brigade. Thank you guys so much. Thanks for coming over from the Next News Network. I know a lot of you guys checked that video on the Red Dawn emails, the leaks out. So again, we're going to keep it real. We're about right and wrong. We're not about left or right. We don't like those labels. And we're about the truth. So guys, I love you, and I'll see you on the flip side.